This is 5 o'clock shadow on Pacifica Radio Network. In today's program, we will continue to examine the implications of the nuclear meltdown and disaster at Fukushima. We'll be looking at the latest releases into the air and to the Pacific Ocean from that doomed nuclear facility. We'll also look at water concerns in the local New York region on the Hudson River in regard to the operation of the Indian Point nuclear power plant. We'll be speaking with Riverkeeper on that. Also, details about X-ray vans and scattering and impromptu exposures that the government is engaged in even as we speak. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and that a secret State Department cable about the internal legislative manipulations and opposition to the reckless operation of nuclear power plants in Japan. That issue goes across oceans and is of some concern in our originating broadcast region, the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut metropolitan area. Of concern is the operation of the Indian Point nuclear power plant, and there was another milestone in the community opposition to its risk and operation overnight, where there was a hearing at the Westchester County Office Building headquarters in White Plains about what to do about Indian Point. Among those who were there and testifying were Paul Gallet and our live guest, Philip Musigas, of Riverkeeper, the organization that has been pushing for the clarity of the Hudson River and the safety of Indian Point. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you, Robert. I'm happy to be here.
Well, what happened last night at Westchester County, and what position does the county intervention hold in the ultimate process of relicensing or not Indian Point?
Well, the county legislature, this is the Westchester County Environment and Energy Committee of the county legislature, invited us to come and talk about Riverkeeper's concerns with Indian Point. They asked us to focus on the operational history of the plant, the history of mechanical problems and shutdowns and other whole range of concerns we have, as well as the environmental impacts of the plant. And so Paul Gallet and I presented our case. Riverkeeper has been working on raising concerns about Indian Point and trying to force them to upgrade their safety systems and their environmental protections for over 10 years now. And so we have a lot of experience with this. But we reiterated our concerns about the earthquake risk that we've raised previously, and that's supported by Columbia University. We talked about the concerns our 4,000 members and many people in the evacuation zone have about, how difficult it would be to evacuate the 300,000 people that live within 10 miles of Indian Point, much less the 20 million people that live within 50 miles of the plant. And of course, that's a concern that's come to light again since the Fukushima disaster and the spread of radiation in Japan, which we know now has gone far beyond even 25 and 30 miles. And so the idea of a 10-mile evacuation zone is just really unworkable at this point. We also talked about the history of the plan, about the, our main concern about, trying to figure out what the actual condition of Indian Point is now after operating for 40 years. We know the plant that has had leaking spent fuel pools, leaking corroded pipes, buried pipes that have never been inspected. And so, our focus on the safety side there is to we really need the facts on what's the actual condition of this plant.
Philip, to put it into context, what is the radioactive release history of Indian Point into the Hudson River and or the atmosphere, or the groundwater for that matter?
Sure. Well, Indian Point, and like all nuclear plants in the U.S., is actually legally allowed to release radiation into the environment, both airborne and liquid releases. And they release quite a bit. They release, several hundred curies of radiation into the Hudson River every year. They dilute it when they release it, and so under the regulations, they're allowed to release it in small amounts. But over the course of the year, it's quite a bit. Our main concern more recently, since about 2005, has been leaks from these spent fuel pools that hold all the nuclear waste. actually leaking very, very radioactive water, leaking into the groundwater, and then the groundwater flowing into the Hudson River. And so we basically have an unknown amount of this slow leakage of very toxic water, which has contaminated the groundwater underneath the plant. The water table under the plant is now has very high levels of strontium 90 and of tritium in the groundwater.
Strontium 90?
Yes.
Whoa, which is that's one of a those, log life. What is it, a 30-year half-life?
It has a 29.5-year half-life, and it's a very dangerous form of radiation. It's it mimics calcium, and it concentrates, if it's uptaken by animals or fish or other things, it accumulates in the bone and can lead to, you know, leukemias and other kinds of cancers. And so that's strontium 90 is a particularly worrisome element. And that we know that actually came from the spent fuel that was stored from the Indian Point 1 reactor, which has been basically mothballed but sitting there since the 1960s. And so, you know, the concern there is these are unmonitored releases. These leaks actually were going on from Indian Point for over 10 years without the owners of the plant or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission actually being aware that they were continuing. And so, you know, it's a concern for us that we have miles of underground piping, buried piping. We have very old systems at this facility that have not been inspected. Some of the pipes literally have not been looked at since the plant was built 38 years ago.
Philip, so, your reference to the strontium 90 is extraordinarily alarming to me, it being in the water table. Can you help us understand what, if any, is the connection between the local water table and the not-so-far-away Croton Reservoir and other systems that provide water for the city and other parts of the region? How are water tables interconnected?
Well, actually, fortunately for us in this case, the water table under the plant is not connected to the Croton Reservoir, and mainly because it's a much lower elevation. It's much closer to the river, and because the plant sits in kind of a bowl-shaped depression with the open side of the bowl being towards the Hudson River, that unfortunately for the Hudson, all of this groundwater contamination that is built up in the water table then all flows westward towards the Hudson and leaches into the Hudson River. And so even though the Croton Reservoir is nearby, it's far enough uphill and basically away from in the opposite gradient that it is not at risk. Now, that does not mean the Croton Reservoir is obviously at risk if there were an accident at any point and a radiation release from the plant, you know, of a larger sort. But the Croton Reservoir is about 5 miles away. The Kensico Reservoir, which is the terminus of all the both the Catskill Aqueduct and the Croton Aqueduct that feed water into New York City, they meet at the Kensico Reservoir, and so that's the last open reservoir of drinking water before it's funneled into the aqueduct to take the water to the city. So it's 15 miles from Indian Point. We're very concerned that if there is an accident at Indian Point and a radiation release, that and we know now from Japan that, you know, under certain conditions, the radiations can certainly travel 15 miles, that could affect the drinking water supply. And again, we want to get the facts. We want to find out, you know, what is the contingency plan if that happens. And what we've learned thus far is not encouraging. And, you know, by no fault of New York City, there really is not much that can be done if a reservoir becomes contaminated with radiation. They would basically have to flush out the entire system until they got rid of the irradiated water and bring new water down from the Catskills to replace that. And that would be a major, you know, a major problem, I think, for the water supply. That would take several days.
We're speaking with Philip Musigas, riverkeeper. And, Philip, you and your colleagues introduced a novel argument in the hearings and debates about the continued operation of Indian Point when you said you don't need a tsunami. I presume that's a reference to the stored fuel that's stacking up. And as you probably know, that has been one of the most alarming things about the Fukushima situation in Unit Number 4. Tell us about what you meant by you don't need a tsunami.
Mm-hmm. Well, the basic fact is that the accident scenario that's unfolded in Fukushima is was caused by the tsunami literally, but the real cause of the accident was the loss of electrical power to the plant and the inability of the plant operators to get that power back, and also the damage to the backup power system, the damage to the diesel generators, and the damage, we presume, to the service cooling water system that would actually pump the cooling water to the reactors and to the spent fuel pools. And so it's not only that you need electrical power to the plant, you also need this cooling water pumping system to be operational after a disaster to be able to get the water to where it needs to go. Very simple, very basic plumbing principles at work here. And so you can even have a situation where you might be able to restore electrical power, but if your service water pumps, if the pipes that are carrying the water from the reservoirs or, you know, from the water storage tanks to the spent fuel pools and to the reactors, if those pipes are damaged, if the pumps are damaged, and you can't get cooling water onto the nuclear fuel, then you have the problem of the fuel heating up, the water evaporating, leading to meltdowns and leading to spent fuel pool fires. And tragically, that is what we've seen happen in Japan. And so at Indian Point, this is a major concern because the two spent fuel pools, there's one for each operating reactor, they have a total of 1,500 tons of nuclear waste stored in them. They're very tightly packed full of nuclear waste. And if there is a loss of water to those pools or if the cooling system shuts down over a period of time, and, you know, we're talking a day and a half, we're not talking weeks here, then the water will start to evaporate. And if the fuel is exposed, it will actually begin to melt and to catch fire and to release very large amounts of radiation. So this is a very tangible concern. It is exacerbated by the fact that the spent fuel pools are not inside a containment dome. They are in a regular industrial building with a metal roof. They are not well protected. And so, you know, you have a situation where if you have a natural disaster, you can have a flood, a storm surge, a hurricane on the Hudson River. You can certainly have a hurricane in New York. We don't need a tsunami to get us to the point where we have a loss of cooling water to these systems, and that's what we were talking about when we said that.
Philip, at the hearing, there is a statement that is reported by Jerry Nappe from Entergy Nuclear Northeast, claiming, one, that the company takes the storage of used fuel very seriously and uses two very safe methods. But Mr. Nappe apparently went on to say that the legislators convening these Westchester County hearings that you and your colleagues from Riverkeeper were at last night said that legislators Michael Kaplowitz and Martin Rogalski were, quote, here's what he said, that they, quote, have moved past addressing the understandable concerns people have following the earthquake and tsunami in Japan and on to Legislator Kaplowitz's self-serving agenda to close Indian Point, end quote. Is that a fair representation of things?
I don't think so. I think that's a I think if you call Legislator Kaplowitz's I think sincere efforts to get public information to the legislature from Entergy and from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and to raise valid concerns about safety at Indian Point, you know, if you call that servicing his agenda, well, and I think that's a perfectly fine agenda, frankly. I think he is doing his job as an elected official in responding to public concerns and seeking additional information. And, you know, this is typical of Entergy to spin someone's words into something that they did not originally say. And I think, you know, Mike Kaplowitz did say that, you know, we had several previous meetings about specifically about the seismic risk and specifically about evacuation planning. And so the meeting that we attended with the legislature focused on more day-to-day safety issues, the condition of the plant, the this problem with the leaking spent fuel pools and nuclear waste, which was a problem before Fukushima. It is a problem now, and it will continue to be a problem until Entergy fully addresses it.
Well,
they have every ability to address this problem voluntarily without the NRC requiring them to do so. They can move spent fuel out of the spent fuel pools and reduce the risk of a nuclear waste fire. and they will not do it simply because of money. And that is inexcusable to us.
Final question. This is a county hearing. Where do we stand on the road to decommissioning of Indian Point in regard to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission hearings and relicensing procedures?
Well, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission relicensing hearing, which Riverkeeper and the New York State Attorney General will be presenting our cases at that hearing. That is scheduled for later this year. That will probably be in September, October of this year, and it will be a very large and complex case. We have mounted the largest opposition to a relicensing of a nuclear plant in the U.S. So far. There's a total of 15 different legal challenges that have been raised and been accepted into the hearing, and so we are busy preparing our case. We have nuclear engineers as experts. We have experts on groundwater contamination and a whole range of issues, and we're prepared to put on the best case we can. And we also we're urging our elected officials, and we're urging the NRC to allow us to present evidence on the emergency evacuation plan and on the nuclear waste issue at this hearing, because as it stands right now, those issues have been purposely left out of the hearing by the NRC. We think those are critical issues of concern, and they should be heard at the relicensing.
Philip Musigas is with Riverkeeper. That's riverkeeper.org for further information, isn't it, Philip?
Yes, thank you, Robert. www.riverkeeper.org. Thanks.
Well, you have certainly educated us today, and we thank you for the time and wish you the best of success in your continuing efforts.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. That version being performed by Courtney Pine, the song originally recorded by Gary Bartz and the NTU troupe, and it is, of course, based on the poetry of Harlem poet Langston Hughes. And that concludes today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow. We give thanks to Philip Musigas of Riverkeeper.org for the up-to-the-minute testimony on what happened at the Westchester hearings on Indian Point. Thanks also to Michael G. Haskins for engineering today. If you have tips, comments, or leaks, give us email at theshadow@wbai.org, theshadow at wbai.org, or drop us a note at 120 Wall Street, New York, 10003. In New York, 4 or 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight.